Fred Film Radio, New York Film Festival, United States.
This is Fred Film Radio. I'm Samantha Sartori at the 55th New York Film Festival. This festival shows a very limited number of movies and has no prizes. The prizes is being selected, and the director of New York Film Festival, Kent John, said they select the movie that moved them. Among the 25 movies selected from all around the world this year is Miss Hyde by Serge Bozon, who is here with us this morning to talk about the movie. Good morning, Serge, and thanks for being with us.
Good morning, thank you.
I would like to start talking about the screenplay. You wrote this film with Axel Rupert, and could you please say a few words about how you collaborate on the screenplay, and how did you use the original model?
So, Axel Rupert is my screenwriter since the very beginning. In my early movies, she wrote everything by herself. Now we are co-writing, so I also write several scenes, even I should say half of the movie. But it was her idea in the beginning to transpose the original Robert Louis Stevenson's novel, but in a contemporary setup with a female character, not a male character, as a teacher in the suburbs. And in the end, it's a very loose adaptation of Robert Louis Stevenson. It's not at all an action movie, not even an horror movie. It's more about teaching and how to transform when you're a bad teacher to become a good teacher, when it's not a self-conscious transformation but an accident, what can happen, and how something that saves you from a pedagogical point of view can destroy you from a more intimate point of view.
I see. The main differences between Miss Jekyll and Miss Hyde as a teacher seems to me that the first is trying to give some knowledge, and this is not really successful at that. Instead, the mission of Miss Hyde is teaching how to think. That is often missing in educational system. Can you talk about how you approach it with your choice to use the disabled student Malik that catch the attention of Miss Hyde?
Yeah, it's a good point, yes. I think there was some kind of almost mirror effect between Malik and Mrs. Jekyll, because he's like, in France, we would say the canard boiteux, the broken duck, the broken duck, you know what I mean? He's the broken duck of the pupils, because he's disabled, as you know, and with his legs. And she's, we should say, the broken duck of the teachers, because she's the bad teacher. She doesn't have any success. She's a failure professionally in all sense of the word. So they have something in common. It's their failure. But strangely, they are not, in the beginning of the movie, close to each other. They don't support each other. They are, on the contrary, very much offensive against each other, especially Malik, who is a very fresh pupil, even insolent. And so I wanted the movie to be the mirror by which the two broken ducks will be united by the transmission of knowledge.
Very interesting. It is also interesting that her bullying husband and colleagues never face her new danger side. Can you say a few words about this, and in particular, how you develop the relationship with the husband? That is really interesting.
Thank you. José Garcia is a star in France, but I think he's unknown in the States. In France, he specialized in very big comedies, very commercial comedies. It's the first time that he plays in something like this. So what I wanted to do is to find for this very, very lonely teacher, very fragile, very shy, and very dominated by her own anxiety, I wanted to have a kind of secret garden with her husband, which is the only place where she does have a little protection. He's very tender with her, he's perhaps even overprotective. He's a houseman, you know, he doesn't work. It's just do the dishes or trying to find some new sheets for the table. So it counterbalances all the dark stuff that she's lived in, because it's the only place where she can rest a little. And it's also got a little comical touch, because I think the husband doesn't understand very well the depths of the difficulties she's dealing with in her daily professional life. So he says always sweet things, but which are not very helpful to her.
Yes, it's pretty clear that he is out of the world,
absolutely,
completely. And he doesn't really understand
exactly
her uncomfortable situation. The main character in the movie seems to be written for Isabelle Huppert. How did you choose your actor, and what is your relationship with them, and what is your method?
I don't have any methods that I could spell out, any theory about the acting. It depends a lot of the actors, of the projects, but it was written for Isabelle, just like my previous movie called Tip Top, where she played a completely opposite role. And how do I work with Isabelle? It's complicated to say. I don't rehearse. I don't speak a lot about the characters, the motivation, the deep psychological issues. I just give her some very precise physical positions. You must be there, then go there, then move on your shoulder and take your hand. And then I let her try anything she wants in terms of way of playing, and then I interact by saying...
But you give them the script.
Of course. Okay. So she learns all the lines. I give her very strict physical directions, and I do usually long shots. It's not like very like in the States, where a lot of commercial movies are very, very edited. It's cut all the times. And then I just watch how she plays, and then I say, perhaps, I don't know, but she could be a little sadder there, or perhaps then in the end you could look up and just don't move during 5 seconds and then go on. But it's like this, and I don't... I film on 45, not digital. So I don't do so many shots because it's too expensive. And I like the way... movie was directing before digital, where you had this adrenaline rush because you know that print is very expensive. You cannot do... Now, to be simple, with digital, if you do a scene in one shot or in 50 shots, it doesn't change anything, financially speaking, because it doesn't cost anything. With 35 millimeters, it's not the same, because each time you do, you have to develop then, et cetera. So I like to keep, like in the old style, a kind of tension. You cannot do it infinitely. You have to stay, like Alain Doan, one of my favorite film directors, said from the States, he said, budget, speed, tempo.
I see. How did your experience as an actor influence the way that you direct them? And how did you work with Romain Duris? His performance is really impressive in a new direction in your movie.
I must confess that I'm not at all a big actor. I play something like, I don't know, 55 in 55 movies, but usually it's like second part. I had perhaps only four, three or five times the main part in a movie. It's very instinctive, but I like to play. I should say I'm a little playful with the actors. For example, Romain Duris is never used in France as a comical actor, and I think he has great comical talents, but
absolutely
underdeveloped. Usually he plays, you know, the handsome guys who try to seduce somebody. In my movie, he's very ridiculous. He's like a fool. He has a very strong idea of himself in the movie because he's the head of the school. But there is something... it's so authoritarian that it becomes almost spastic, if I may say so. And it was very funny for me to even just to choose his hairstyle, for example, the way he looks like a strange dandy, but very not in the right
place.
Because in the suburbs, in the French suburbs where I shot, nobody would dress like that. And it's true that in the suburbs where I did shoot and where I stayed, in fact, for more than a month during the shooting, just to feel a little the place, it's very hard there. It's like a ghetto, you know. You never see white people in there. There are only colored people, and they are all living in a kind of very poor... you have only skyscrapers. You don't even have... At night, you cannot even find even a fast food. After 7 o'clock, you have nothing. Not a bar, not a fast food. It's very strange... You get a very strange feeling there.
Talking about this point that is really, really interesting in the movie, and I was talking with a lot of friends here that came to watch the movie, and, you know, they were really confused in some way because they say, why, you know, like all these Arabic, like French, and my question is, what does the two blonde girls saying the same things at the same time represent to you? Because it captured a lot my attention, especially at the start of the movie when there is the meeting.
Yeah. It's a joke, but not only a joke. So in those parts of suburbs, of the French Paris suburbs, as I told you, there are almost no white people. and in some schools you had no white people. Okay. So what I wanted to do is just to respect this reality, but to put a twist on it by having two girls, the only girls of the class, but you think, girl, they will be sweeter, they will be more gentle, but in fact, not in the same sense of the guys, but they are also very negative and very aggressive with Madame Jekyll, and they are like a double perfect devil angels, yeah. You know, because they are very beautiful. One is blonde, the other is brown. One has a very soft voice, the other has a dark voice. One is like a rock and roll singer, and the other is like a peasant, very vital. And so it's the maximum contrast, boy, girl, black, white, etc. And it's a way of showing that when you should expect that it's an error, some kind of help, that's where it's even worse for Madame Jekyll.
I understand. And how did you find the kids? There is some professional among them, or they are all...
All non-professional actors. All are living in the suburbs. All are pupils. Yeah. And I liked very much working with them. A lot of the lines... when they interact with Miss Jekyll by saying some almost insult-like interjection, we are found by themselves. And for me, it's a very pity that in my own country, those kind of people are under-employed in the movies, because they are employed only in kind of social movies where they only play the victims, you know, the victims of society, the victims of... segregation, the victim of racism, like that. But I think it's much more interesting and thrilling, even for them, to have something else to play other than a victim, and to be funny, to be
absolutely
to be everything, to be clever. For example, the Malik, in fact, is a very clever guy.
He's really disabled.
Yeah, no, he's not disabled.
Ah, okay.
But in fact, he's a very clever guy. As a character, in the beginning, you think it's the worst of the pupil, but in the private laboratory scene, where for the first time in his life, he realizes what does it mean to think about a problem for trying to resolve it, how to think logically, how trying to solve a theoretical problem. Then his spirit opens up, and then you can see that he has a kind of... passion for knowledge.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's like something that a lot of these kids probably have in common, but they don't really have the chance.
Exactly.
I would like to ask you about some technical aspect of the movie. The aesthetic of the movie is really unique, and as Tip Tap was. And how did you work with your DP, Celine Bozon?
My DP is my sister.
I know.
So I worked with her in all my movies. So it's a long process, because... we have the opportunity, of course, to talk a lot and to prepare a lot. My film are not huge budget, but I must thanks deeply the producer, because they always give me the luxury not only to shoot on 35, but also to prepare the shooting by doing a lot of research and spending some prints just by doing how should we say this in English, the essays. You take the film print, you ask the actor to come, you try, then you look, then you take another stock.
Rehearsal.
A lot of technical rehearsal. Thank you very much. So, for this movie, I wanted something special in terms of color. I mean, I wanted the movie to have a lot of colors, but not like in the classical Hollywoodian Technicolor movie of the 50s that I love, because I wanted to have the colors, but with a very shiny light, very, very bright, but without, like in Tip Top, going over something almost overexposed. How to have the very strong colors, but with everything still on the light for the class scene. And I could go on for long, but it's very technical. For example, just to give one example. So for the scene between the Mrs. Jekyll and her husband, mm-hmm. in their small house, we tried something that was never done, I think so. It's like not an American night with in France, but an evening night. It means very simply, you shoot during the daylight, but you put on the top a 10x10
dark screen.
Yeah, so it cuts the light of the sun, but you still see the light of the sun in the background of the image. What it does is, on the forefront of the image, it's a little shadowy, very obscure, but in the end, you see that there's something almost shiny. So it's very artificial, it's stylized, but it gives you, for me, a kind of discrete, surreal feeling. How can it be so shadowy in the forefront and so shiny on the back? This is the kind of thing that you try.
Well, but we notice it because, the lighting is like some part of a very peculiar part of your movies. You used to be a teacher in high school.
Yes.
How did you use this experience in this movie? And what did you teach? And what is your background?
So I was first a philosophy teacher in high school, and then I went to do mathematical logic in the university. But in fact, I was only a teacher in high school in the Paris suburbs for 2 years. So my experience was very limited. It was more than 25 years ago.
Okay.
So I didn't rely so much on my own experience, even if I was a failure like her. I had very strong problems of discipline and a lot of chattering during my lessons. But for the preparation of this movie, I went with several friends of mine who are teachers right now, and I just listened to some of the courses they gave, and I also tried to give free courses of my own just to see how the audience will interact.
Do you think that the kids change?
It depends so much on the places where you teach, on the kind of suburbs. I think it's quite difficult to have a general statement. It will be perhaps even pretentious because I don't know well enough the subject, which is so diverse. But I think in some of the places it can be quite difficult.
The movie was already screened during the festival. What was the reaction of the American audience?
It's always hard to say because the only reaction I get is the questions during the Q&A or the applauses at the end. So for me, they were very good. But I don't know, I should speak with more spectators of the movie and to get the feeling more real. I thought it was the questions and the panel yesterday, for example, were very, very, very gentle, very good, and very exciting. But
you already know that New York love your movies, right? You know, like a tip top, like was at IFC open for a long time, and the response of the audience was big. And I don't know about the rest of America, but I think New York really love your movies.
It's very nice. But I must say, it's true. I've got a very special relation to New York that I have with no other U.S. cities, because thanks to the Lincoln Film Center, a lot of my movies are movies that I played in, or movies of friends of mine were shown many times, etc. So it's true that I think I've got the chance, the privilege to have a special relation to New York.
Absolutely. They choose your movie among the 25 movies that they think that they are going to be the best movie of the year. So I think this is the best prize because there is a very big production, production for all around the world, and there is your movie, and we are very happy about that. And all the screening, by the way, they were sold out.
Yeah.
Thanks to Serge Pozon for being with us today.
Thanks very much.
I'm Samantha Sartori from the 55th New York Film Festival, and this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.